After somebody's cheated, how do you trust again?
I could move past this if I knew there would be no more lies.
Wow.
That indicates that it's not just the infidelity, it's the dishonesty. Porn fuels this a lot because it's all intensity based. Thought that like, oh, the more I get into marriage, it's less intense, less frequent, it's not hot.
Right, it becomes vanilla.
We know that there's more satisfaction in long-term monogamous relationship. And so this spark that people are chasing, that it feels intense and hot all the time, we're kind of lying to ourselves.
And welcome back to the 42 podcast. We're your hosts, Micah and
Sarah.
And we are, I'm trying to speak as fast as you.
Fair.
Yeah. And I'm still probably at 0.5. I feel bad for people that listen to our podcast because they probably go from like going to 2 point when like they're listening to me and then they have to go back to like 0.5 to listen to you. And
they don't have to go to 0.5.
Well,
we've had
some comments, but we are so excited because we have Justin and Amanda on for a second time.
Back again.
We made a lot of people request for them to come back on because they were really impacted by our first podcast. You guys had such wisdom to say, and my mom said that she took pages of notes, and so
same. My parents were like, that was a whole session.
Yeah.
We took so many notes.
I mean,
we heard from a lot of people, a lot of notes.
Even if it was just your mom, I think that's the coolest thing ever.
It was really cool to hear. And so, this one is going to be specific to relationships. And so I'm really excited about that. We got a lot of really great questions,
yeah.
Some pretty deep questions.
Yeah. You asked for juicy questions.
I did.
That's true.
And it terrified me.
I kind of wanted some more specifics. I was afraid that it was just going to be like, how do you communicate? You know, it's like, you know, different things. But they,
and you already know the answer,
I mean,
to that.
People, oh yeah. I mean,
teach
doesn't
us,
everybody,
Micah.
You talk to each other. But they went in and they got some,
pulled out the juice.
They pulled out the juice. Yeah. They pull out the juicer and they juiced it. but I want to know before we kind of get into more of those things, what's like one of the dumbest fights that you guys have had?
Oh gosh. Okay. So first
she
of all,
has one.
we've been married for 13 years.
Okay.
And then prior to that, we dated for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then prior to that, we were friends for 10 years.
I can't do
eight
backwards.
Or 10 years.
Yeah. 10 years.
Something like that. So we have lots of fights.
Okay.
I would say some of the dumber ones were obviously when we were younger, before you even dating, because, you know, you're just younger. You don't know as much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My husband has a gift of, how shall we say, cornball. And he will use his humor, corny humor.
Oh, well, I've never played cornball.
I was like, do you mean cornhole?
It's a combination of cornhole and pickleball. It's the newest craze. So he's got a great sense of humor, often a cheesy sense of humor, and he will often use it when I'm pissed off to try to lighten the mood, which doesn't always lighten the mood.
Yeah.
We were on our way to a friend's party, and I had this mini crock pot queso that I made, and I put it between my feet in our SUV, and I got it around my feet. The moment we pull out of the driveway,
I took a hard turn, like Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Like, gotta get to the party.
Yeah.
And the queso spills
everywhere, like queso pedicure she got. Like, it was all over.
And I honestly was more concerned about the car than myself. And this is the moment where I'm on the verge of a meltdown, where he asks, is there milk in that? And I said, it's queso. Of course there's milk in it. And he said,
well, there's no use crying over it then.
Oh.
That would be infuriating.
I'm mad.
Years later.
I am mad for you, Amanda.
Thank you.
No use crying over spilled milk. That's what I chose to go with.
This is what I went
That's the
with.
Statement I went for.
Oof.
After being the one who was driving, the queso pedicure, then decided to go with the milk joke.
LOL. Bye. We're here.
Yeah, that's not my finest moment.
Thanks for sticking with me. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good. And something that I feel like we would do. I feel like I try to lighten it. Like when you're starting to get a little irritated, you know, honk a boob or something.
Yeah. You know? That's true. plays cornball in his own way.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of cornball as well. Do you have your side?
Yeah,
at
I
all?
Would say I'm pretty particular, and you're pretty particular, so we can fight for over sure. like really small things, mm-hmm. And like the way that things should be done is, you know, something we disagree over. Like, I think you should use a turn signal when you're turning.
Oh yeah,
my wife
for sure
believes that.
Do you just do whatever you want?
Yeah, like my wife believes that that okay. noise is a problem in the car.
No,
right? Like I don't like that noise so much, and I will use my turn signal, for example, to let people know if I'm going around a curve, even though everyone else is
oh,
too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, but we're going
not
this...
changing lanes, people.
No, just going around the curve. Like we're all going left.
Everyone else is, so it's essentially straight.
Yeah, but and so I'll use the turn signal there.
I use my straight signal.
Exactly.
When I'm going down
and
the
she
road.
Will reach over. She used to. She doesn't do it anymore.
Thank you.
She just cusses. But she used to reach over and turn off the turn signal. Things like that.
Yeah.
You know, little
yeah,
things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I'm glad you said that because now it actually did spark. So because yeah. she is
great.
Was one of the worst backseat drivers. And by backstreet, I'm backstreet.
Backstreet.
But it's. But it wasn't in the back. She was in the front. And so, and yeah. it was just all the.
Yes. Beep, beep, beep.
Oh, beep, beep.
Beep, beep, beep.
Beep, 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 beep.
Like.
I was like.
The
brake lights are a mile away.
So real.
A mile away.
So real.
Beep, 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 beep. So much breathing and exhale. And so
I'm like
we
pressing
had to,
the brake with my foot. Like,
yeah.
The invisible brake.
Yeah,
usually,
yeah.
Me
yeah.
and all my compassion usually ends up saying, which of us has been in more car accidents? Doesn't help. It doesn't help.
But don't you, throw fuel on the fire.
You have no reason to doubt me, right? Then it gets yeah. very dark and personal. Like, yeah, I get it.
And then so, you throw milk at her and say...
Thanks for watching, everybody. That's the advice. So,
yeah, I hope that added value. Like, subscribe, share this with somebody yeah, that really would find value in
really
this.
Really needs it.
This is going to cause more fights.
The first thing that came to mind was when we were like at the beginning of our relationship. Mm-hmm. And... you basically were trying to get rid of me.
Whoa.
So,
okay. Let's get some context here.
So we were having like an argument of some kind. And then he was like, well, we've been dating for maybe a year, not even a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, I'm just a little like,
oh, yeah.
You don't know when you want to get married. So I'm just like, I don't know if it's even worth it. If we can even be together. And I was like,
marriage or break up is what
yeah,
you gave her.
Yeah. I think I'm just about rebound for you. I think I even threw that in. And
oh my God.
I yeah. was just like that. I've never seen a guy who was like, you don't want to rush into marriage. That's terrifying for me. Like,
unless you're a guy that is trying to push the girl out.
I guess so. Clearly it didn't work.
No, we're here.
Yeah.
We're here otherwise.
The next day. Yeah.
Oh gosh.
No, but you
yeah.
know what?
Yeah, that was silly.
The thing is we would not be together if we hadn't have then found like right counsel.
Oh
in
yeah,
our life.
For sure. For sure.
Because that was just, we were just operating out of the patterns that we had operated out of for so long. And if we hadn't have had someone, number one, great examples of, oh, well, seems like a healthy relationship. And then people to shed light on the things that we had, our gaps. Without that, we wouldn't even be together.
No.
Totally. We're the product of that as well. Great counsel, great mentoring, great examples. Mm-hmm. Like everything else in life, we try to model ourselves after someone or something. But then in relationships, we kind of think it's like, open season, like just figure it out. But I think that to have a thriving, successful marriage, you have to have a picture of what that looks like, examples, inspiration, and then also feedback. Someone that can look objectively into your story and say, hey, you both need to address this. So yeah, we're the product of that as well.
For the person that's listening to this, okay, that sounds great. How do I even start finding somebody like that, that is trustworthy, that's good, that's credible, that, you know, has good values? Like, how does somebody even start to explore that?
Like finding the right examples.
Finding the right examples. Maybe they don't have great examples in their life currently, or they don't have counselors and they're just like, oh, where do I even start to begin to look for that? Yeah. Because there's everybody on the internet trying to be a coach or a life coach or something right now. And so, like, what would you suggest, you know, what would you recommend?
I think number one is like, obviously you can just go find anything anywhere, but you really want to make sure that you're looking not just at like what someone's saying, but what the fruit of their life mm-hmm. looks like. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like you really want to focus on, do these people have the life and the qualities that I want? Right? Because someone can say something over and over, but mm-hmm. if their life is demonstrating it. And so finding people whose marriage reflects the qualities that you're looking for can be a great way to start to find inspiration. And some of our greatest like influences are very, very close to us. Others are not so close to us,
yeah.
but we are inspired by them from afar. We yes. observe how their life works. We might get to interact with them infrequently, but the moments that we do, we treat like a feast, mm-hmm. right? So it's mm-hmm. just like, I think there have to be multiple layers of that, but I would say pay attention to the fruit on the tree, and then that can inform like the way that you engage. Mm.
I like to describe it as that you need different levels of marriage mentors. Mm. So it's exactly what he just said. We need some marriage mentors we might not ever meet in this life, but yeah. maybe they're very credible. They have the fruit on the tree. They've written some great marriage books mm-hmm. or they do some great marriage podcasts mm-hmm. and you observe and you're gleaning from how they treat one another, how they speak to one another, the principles that they teach, the principles that they live. Mm-hmm. And then we need some marriage mentors that are a little bit closer, a little bit more accessible. Mm-hmm. We might not be able to call them in the middle of the night, but maybe we see them every week or every month at the community center or at church or something of that nature where we can ask questions like, hey, have you ever been through this? Mm-hmm. Could you give me some advice or could you pray with me or how would you encourage me? Someone that yeah. we can actually have relationship with. And then as we start building those relationships, we can see who is really safe, mm-hmm. who is available, who is consistent. And that's when we need to develop a closer relationship with a couple married longer than us, mm-hmm. a little bit more experienced, not family, so they're mm-hmm. Unbiased. Yep. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that we can call like when we're going through a really tough time of, hey, what do I do? Can you pour into me? And having those multiple layers gives you always opportunities to learn and grow.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's very good.
Just because people have been married longer, it is kind of going back to checking the fruit on top of that, mm-hmm. because maybe they've been married for a long time, but if they don't have the fruit, maybe they aren't the best, right? Would you
it depends on what you're looking for, right? So like what you desire in your relationship, mm-hmm. right? So if a couple is just in relationship looking for like, how do we build an empire together? How do we build a strong business? Well, there's couples that you can glean that from for sure because of how they operate. However, maybe the quality of their relationship or the way they raise their children doesn't reflect what you want for your family.
Sure.
And so you can take pieces mm-hmm. of someone's story and use it as inspiration and then pieces of other. Like for example, when it comes to our parenthood, there's some very specific people who we look to the way that they navigate their parenthood, but that's what we draw from them. There's other couples that we glean from for other qualities. And so I think it's more realistic to operate that way rather than saying we want to be you.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's people are people.
Yeah.
Right.
But well,
you
yeah.
can learn a lot mm-hmm. from.
And it also elevates people because inevitably someone who's had a great marriage, someone's going to have an affair or something's going to happen. Some tragedy is going to happen. And if we kind of make someone a god, then we're mm-hmm. setting ourselves up for a lot of disappointment.
Yeah.
But recognizing I can learn from them. I don't need to be exactly yeah. like them.
Should we dive into the juice?
I guess we can dive into the juice. Are you guys ready?
We'll see.
All right. Here comes
the OJ. Who asks open questions to the internet and just says, hey, give us the yeah, like who thinks let me hop on Instagram and tell people ask the question. That's the hardest questions. That's where we are. You came to our house with the hardest questions the internet has to offer. Thanks,
you
man.
You ate our nachos.
Yeah, you ate our chips.
And then asked us these juicy questions.
Oh my
questions.
Gosh. Those okay, so we're in their place and they're so gracious. You have a lovely home. And they cooked us nachos and the nachos were so good.
They really were.
They were so good.
One of those meals where I was sad that I was full.
Yes.
Because I was like,
because I'm like, I shouldn't stop eating. Keep eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done that many a times. I've gotten better with my old age to like,
your
know,
old age.
You know,
such a sage.
to like know when, yeah. okay, maybe I need to like wait in for it to like actually go down the esophagus
yeah.
before putting more in yeah. and see yeah. if it's going to be full after
right.
that.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah.
I have done that where I've eaten so fast, but then, and I'm done and it feels good. But then like 20 minutes later, the rest of it oh, is no. still going. Yes. And then it gets very uncomfortable. Yeah. I had to excuse myself. We were at one of our friends and we had Mediterranean. It was this big bowl. Nobody finished it. I did. Everybody read like the room, saved man. Half of their bowl. And I'm just like, rum, rum, rum. I was like, this is so good. Were you there?
Okay, I'm like, I
don't think you were there. Okay. And I had to excuse myself and go to their guest room to lay down.
Just needed a little nappy.
Literally to lay down and wait for it to surpass. And be like, you guys carry on. Yes. Carry on without me. I know you're having fun. I do have a little FOMO. But I'm going to be in here.
This is medical.
Yeah. This is medical. Yeah. Yeah. I will be horizontal for the next 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So,
what are some of the roots of codependency and how do you overcome them? Oof. Yeah.
You go.
This could be a very long answer.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Might be our last one.
There's a lot there.
Yeah. The roots of codependency are going to be different person to person, as most traumatic coping behaviors are. Codependency, by definition, is I am dependent on you in a way where I cannot support myself without you. Or my emotions are predicated on your emotions. Mm. So if I'm having a good day and you get home and you're having a bad day, I can no longer have the permission to have a good day. I need to shut myself down. I need to not trigger you. I need to bend everything around you. And we lose our sense of self because our sense of self is dependent, interdependent, codependent with the other person.
Well, I remember I used to joke about this a lot. I'd be like, we're not codependent. Are we?
Right. Like, exactly.
I have to check with you before I can be sure about myself. Mm. And I mean, we were extremely codependent in our relationship, and especially in the first 5 years. It honestly almost cost us our relationship because I was so, I struggled so much to have my own emotional like stability because I'd be so reactive to hers. So like, her temperament tends to go through some mental struggle. Mm-hmm. And when I would observe her go to that place, I would go on high alert. And this is rooted in my own story, my own trauma. But by seeing her go there, now I feel dysregulated and unsafe. And then I go into fix it mode. I want to make you happy. I want to make you happy. What did I do? I'm the problem. All the stuff that can come out, mm-hmm. right? But by doing that, by being codependent, I approach someone who's struggling and I add more weight to it because it's now like, now you're making me sad because you're sad. That's a lot of unnecessary pressure and not paying attention to what was going on in me, but rather attaching it to her. Sorry.
No.
Because it was hard.
Thanks. There's a book I go through with engaged couples, and it gives this great image for codependency and what we want to aim for, which is healthy interdependence. Mm. So independence is like a capital letter H, where both parties are individually standing, not touching. If one falls over, it's kind of like, well, I'm still standing. It's fine. Like, I don't really feel it if you leave me, if you walk away, if you care about me or not. Then codependence, if you picture a capital letter A, we're leaning on one another. And if something happens to you, I fall apart. Mm. And then what we want to aim for is a capital letter M, where we both maintain our individual identity and we learn how to trust and support and rely on one another. But God forbid, if something happens to one party, the other person is going to be okay, but it's also going to hurt at the same time. And so a lot of the roots can come from childhood trauma, abandonment, dysfunction, unpredictability in childhood. If the person in childhood had to be the one to regulate the home or to cater to an addicted parent's unpredictability, they're going to learn almost like a superpower how to read people and how to read people's emotions. The problem is, as a child, we poorly interpret these as, oh, I didn't do a good enough job, and that's why the family's falling apart. Mm-hmm. And so then we grow up into adulthood going, oh, I didn't do a good enough job, and that's why my relationship feels hard, or this conversation is tough, or my partner isn't happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So practically, I think coming out of codependency means knowing where I begin and end, and where you begin and end, like owning my emotions and distinguishing them from your emotions, and learning how to observe with care your significant other, knowing like, okay, I see you're struggling, but that doesn't mean I have to go there too. I can care about you, I can love you, and I can feel for you, but it doesn't mean that I now get dragged into that with you. Mm-hmm. I can offer you support if you're asking for it. I can offer you encouragement if you're asking for it, but I can also have my own emotional ability to regulate.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but can this happen between like friendship as well?
Yeah.
Where, yes. Because I feel like I've seen this happen just in like best friends or friendship where one person is down, the other person is down, or, you know, and vice versa. And so it's not just in marriage or boyfriend, girlfriend. It's just, you can have this in any relationship or with a mom or with a dad,
for sure.
Where it's like, well, it's like, hey, well, like, what's wrong? Well, my mom's having a bad day. Mm-hmm. So you're having a bad day too then. Mm-hmm. Huh? And, I've also seen that. So
it can feel so magnetic and strong when you're in it though, because the other side of that coin, the exact same coin, but the other side of it is like, you make me so happy. I'm so happy.
Right.
Like
you
light up my day. Mm-hmm. Like you complete me. I mean, those are amazing feelings, right? They're really, really potent, but that also creates this codependency because the subtext is like, I'm not happy without you.
Yeah.
My day is gray without you.
Yeah.
Right. So like codependency can be really magnetic and feel a lot like love when you're in it. That's why people stay in it, because it's like, it feels like passion. Right? Like, wow, I have the power to make them happy. It's very powerful, but it's not sustainable. It's not healthy. And you go 5 years down the road and it's exhausting to feel like I have to prop up somebody else's emotions.
Yeah.
And so I think a big factor coming out of it is, again, understanding your emotional boundaries with one another and respecting that space.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing that?
Yeah.
Is that like, is there maybe like a resource, like a book, or, I mean, I feel like we always go back to counseling because I mean, that's been such a huge deal for us, but let's say somebody doesn't have the finances for counseling. Sure. Is there, what are some tangible things they could do to like maybe work on that? Or maybe tools to work through.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest is taking personal responsibility for your own emotional processing. So that can mean having your own support system. Now, your spouse or significant other is probably going to be one of the primary characters in that, but they can't be the only character in it, right? So it's like, my only support system is you, and I'm bringing it all to you, and I need you to fix it. Like, as adults, we have to know how to take care of ourselves. Sometimes that means I need to take 10 minutes and journal a bit about this. I need to go to my close confidant, my friend. I need to go to someone who can advise me and guide me. If I'm a person of faith, I need to go to some people who can pray for me. And spreading out that weightiness a bit is really, really healthy. I'm a firm believer that a married person who does not have a healthy support system puts far too much pressure on their spouse, expecting their spouse to be their lover, their potential co-parent, their confidant, their ride or die, their roommate, their chef, like all of these things.
Their accountant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like too much, right? Yeah, like you need a support system, and your spouse can be a part of that. But I think one of the most practical ways out of codependency is taking care of yourself in some other ways.
And I think the great news, especially as life and technology has advanced, is it really eliminates excuses. Yeah. There's opportunities available for every budget to address this because it starts with taking that personal ownership. Mm-hmm. There's even support groups for navigating and overcoming codependence.
CODA.
And many support groups, they don't charge very much. Some of them are free. Some of them just charge for the workbook and the materials. Mm-hmm. And even if there's not a group meeting in person near you, there are online options. I think there's more power to an in-person group when you're able to be there.
Yeah.
But I love that we have the online options available for people as well.
Yeah,
that's great.
For sure. It's a follow-up question, but it kind of leads into another question. And I feel like when it comes to codependency with parents, there can be like a, maybe on the side of the parent, maybe there was like, this is just like, just from relationships I've seen in people in my life, when it's like, maybe there's some manipulation on one side that leads to that kind of codependency, and then the inability to kind of cut that like unhealthy tie. Mm-hmm. So how does someone set boundaries when it comes to a situation like that? Because that can be really hard if someone is, you try to set a boundary with someone and they come at you with that you're hurting them by trying to set this boundary that's healthy for you.
Most oftentimes when you set a boundary where there hasn't been one, it's going to be resisted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be misunderstood, potentially misinterpreted. But here's something really important, is that boundaries are not about trying to control the behaviors of others. Mm-hmm. you can't talk to me that way. You can't call me at this time. You can't come over whenever you want. We actually have no say over the jurisdiction of what the other person does, parent mm-hmm. or otherwise, mm-hmm. even your own child. Yeah. Like, you cannot control the behavior of others.
Yeah.
Boundaries are about internal dynamics. Mm-hmm. What am I willing to engage in or not? What am I willing to expose myself to or not? So a visual I like to use to kind of help normalize maybe it not being received well mm-hmm. is if you live with your apartment door open and unlocked, and everyone in your world knows, oh, we can go over to Micah and Sarah's fridge whenever we need. They have the best drinks. They have the best food. Their apartment always smells so good. They always have candles in the closet.
The cold plunge is always available.
Always, yeah. And so, no, nobody's running over to do that, though. It's weird.
Sign up online for an appointment, people. Yeah. But if you live with this open door policy, mm-hmm. and then someone, Uncle Fred, goes, oh, I'm throwing a party. And you know what? It's just easier. I'm going to go to Micah and Sarah's house and grab some food. Oh, I'm going to grab this nice candle. And then you go, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And the family just walks into the apartment. They're used to it because that's how it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you start locking your apartment door, does that make you mean or unloving mm-hmm. or uncaring?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. You're setting an appropriate boundary. And then Uncle Fred comes over, smacks his nose into the door because he's like not expecting the door to be locked.
One too many. Yeah. Uncle Fred, it sounds like.
But what is he going to say? Yeah. How dare you? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
What, you think you're better than me? You don't love your family anymore? Yeah. You're not going to be there for me anymore?
Yeah.
And it's not about what they say. Mm-hmm. It is about you taking the appropriate action to be a good steward, to be protective, and to be responsible over what is yours to be responsible over. Mm. And so it might be misinterpreted or misunderstood by others. Mm-hmm. Can we do a better job of improving our communication and our tone and our timing with our family as we're setting boundaries with any loved one? Yes, that's on us. But we have to embrace that it can be a really challenging transition, especially because many families of origin don't operate in healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
This can be cultural dynamics. This also can be just the history of how mental health has been in the world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it can be challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
The specific question that someone asked was about how to set healthy boundaries with in-laws.
I love that one.
In particular.
It sounds like you handled that with Uncle Fred.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, lock that door.
Yeah. I'll actually add something because for lock couples.
The door and hide the lining kugels.
That's so specific. Yeah.
He sounds like a lining kugel guy. Come on. It's Uncle Fred we're talking about here.
So with couples, actually, I think there is another component, especially with in-laws, because Micah's mom calling or dropping by is going to feel different to Micah than it's going to feel to Sarah.
Right. Totally.
Yep.
And so as a couple, how do we set boundaries with our in-laws? Our number one recommendation is you two as a couple have to be in unity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it's not like, well, mom, Sarah doesn't want you to blah, blah, blah. That's not unified.
Yeah.
But rather saying have decided this, or we love spending time with you and we would like a little more time to prepare next time. Could you ask us a couple of days in advance?
Yeah.
And having those conversations. Some people we don't have to explain every boundary to because they're internal. Mm-hmm. But with family, with recurring characters in our lives, we might have to have some conversations like that.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That is good.
I think this is good because I think a lot of people will connect with this. What should a couple do to connect when they express and need love in very different ways from their partner? If they're very, you know, because you guys are professionals in temperament as well, which, you know, maybe we don't have to get into all that because not everybody knows what that is. But, I feel like just for us learning our temperaments have also helped with that too. Cause we're similar in a lot of ways, but then we also have,
but a lot of the ways that we express love is very similar.
Right.
So I think it's a bless. It works.
Oh, sorry. I definitely thought it was an invitation.
It has worked out well for us because we are both extremely affectionate.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I give that and want it and he gives it and wants it, but that's just
so,
how it lined up.
So yeah. So, but there are, I'm countless relationships that are not like that.
Right.
That
of course.
It's like one that's super handsy-fandly. And the other, what was
super
that?
What?
Uncle Fred.
too many lining kugels.
So inappropriate.
Handsy-fangly.
Handsy-fangly.
Well, so, you know, there's one that's super affectionate and maybe expresses and needs it. And the other one's like,
I think that learning about one another is key, because I'm a firm believer that marriage is this gift that teaches us how to love someone different from us. Mm. And I think a lot of times we have this fantasy that marriage will feel good to me, mm-hmm. and also this expectation that marriage will feel good to me. Mm-hmm. And if we believe marriage is about making us happy, then it's easy to feel like it's failing.
Mm. Wow.
Not happy anymore. She's not happy. For me, that was like the first 5 years. It was like, she's not happy, then we're failing. That's not the point. The point of marriage, I think, is to cause us to grow. I would say to make us holy.
Yeah.
But it causes us to be better. And so if I look at some of our biggest differences, I've now had to change my mindset that these are refining opportunities. The areas where we're the same, we don't really grow. We're just like, yeah you're awesome because you're like me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that, right, that sure. doesn't really yep. cause much growth.
Yep.
But
yep.
learning like, wow, you're so different. You see the world differently. You encounter life differently. You respond differently. And I have to learn to love that difference, not just love my way. Because I think a lot of the conflicts in marriage are, you don't do it like me.
Yeah.
Right? And so learning about another person is key. And then learning how to love and accept it. Not try to change it, to give permission. Like, hey, it's okay that you are that way and I'm learning to love it. I think that's one of the primary ways. And this isn't always just affection based, mm-hmm. right? Like something frequent that happens in our marriage.
Did it happen today?
I think yesterday. Something
that happens frequently. You guys already know what it is.
Yeah, is like the expression of support to one another. We navigate a lot of pressure in our life, a lot of stress in our life. And Amanda shows up so beautifully in the realm of practical support, help. And so I hear this question from her all the time. What do you need help with? What do you need help with? How can I help you? That question sounds like nails on a chalkboard to me. Even though it's coming from the sweetest place ever,
yeah.
to me, how can I help you feels like, looks like you don't got this.
Yep, yep,
you know,
totally.
Like, it looks like you need help,
yeah.
right? And so to me, it flares up my independence. And my answer is usually, I don't need help. And in that tone, I don't need help. No, I don't need anything.
I'm like, gosh, why don't I even try?
Do you think, I know this is kind of generalizing here and people will probably get upset, but do you think that's common in men?
It can be.
Like, because I feel like we're kind of the same way where she wants to fix. Mm. Like if I'm like in a slump, we talked about this in our last podcast, she came and she wants to just be like, what are you going through? Wants me to talk about it. And then I talk about it. And then she wants to like fix it. Mm. And sometimes I just want to just like air it out,
yeah.
and just be like, I just need somebody to listen to actually yeah. right now. I'm not looking to get it fixed. Cause it's to me, I'm like, it's not really a big deal. I know like in the moment, I'm just like having a moment, but it's not going to like ruin the rest of my week.
Yeah.
I'm just like kind of, I'm just having a moment right now, but I know it's just going to like pass.
Yeah.
And so I didn't feel like it was important to talk. And so I think I connect with you in that way where it's hearing somebody say that it comes off as, oh, I'm like, I need help.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that is it. Would you say that's like an insecurity?
Yeah, it can be. I think what you just described actually is probably atypical from the way that maybe typical gender stereotypes yeah. would operate.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it has a lot to do with your very, very logical processing mm-hmm. and your very emotional processing. Neither is smarter or less smart or better
yeah.
or worse.
Yeah.
But like we've talked a lot about this,
yeah.
about the ways that you process information. And so for you, being so emotionally driven and emotionally centered, solutions are like the end of emotional processing. And so for someone who yeah. starts
like
at solutions,
ABC, here
right,
we go.
Right. It almost feels like a disservice.
You good?
Yeah.
It feels like
yeah.
a disservice. It's like, well, wait, what about all the overture before we
yeah.
get to that?
Yeah.
Like all of the emotion that comes with it.
Yeah.
So I think we have to be careful with saying that there's certain norms because people are so nuanced.
Totally.
Completely.
Yeah.
But for us, for me, that offer of help doesn't feel like it meets a need. And I regularly say, you could probably quote the sentence that mm-hmm. I say. What do I say whenever you ask for if I can help you?
I don't need help. I need encouragement.
Every time. That's what I say. I don't need help. I need encouragement.
I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah. And that's me doing my very best, and it's not great, doing my very best to voice what I need. I don't need you to do something for me. I need you to tell me, I see you. You're doing a great job.
Yeah.
I believe in you. You've got this.
Yep.
Encouragement fills my tank. Yeah. But guess what? When she's under a lot of pressure, guess what I do? You got this. I believe in you. You're doing a great job. Guess what she needs?
Yep.
Do you need some help?
Do you need help?
I'm like, do something.
Right. Yeah. And it is a constant struggle because I'll just encourage her and then walk out the room.
Yeah. You got this.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, all on do something.
As she's covered in queso.
Yes. Yes. She's like, do something. Right. And so we've had to learn that. And I just really like to paint that picture because a lot of people think this is just about like our sex drive or our physical affection or the way we, you know, display public affection or not.
Yeah.
But it comes down to things like our financial view of life, our support view of life in those moments. Also things like when I'm, this was a big conversation in our marriage, when I'm down, when I'm feeling heavy, when I'm feeling like burdened, what do I need from you? Right. And so for her, she wants someone to be present with her and to offer her support and to hear her. I've had to learn that. I want to be cheered up. Mm-hmm. And so guess what I would do when she was down? Try to cheer her up.
Make a joke about spilled milk.
And she would hate it. Mm. Right. But for me, when I'm down and she's being like sympathetic, I'm like, stop that. Don't cry too. I don't want you. I don't even want to be crying. I want you to remind me of the good in our life. I want you to help pull me up and out. Right. And so learning those nuances has honestly been a lot of work. So
and a long time.
Good job.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure just because naturally you're just going to, your natural inclination is to give what you typically want and need, because she's a words of affirmation. I am not. And so she would give me, especially early on in our relationship, she would give me a lot of words of affirmation and I'd be like, oh, thank you. Great. But I wouldn't reciprocate it because it wasn't that important to me. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And so that's been something that has come up multiple times that I've had to work on. Cause she's just like, I need some more words of affirmation. Just tell me I'm pretty like once, you know? And so that's something that I've had to be just, you really have to like become conscious of that when you learn your partner.
That's one of the reasons I love the phrase, the five love languages, because we do speak our native language and want to hear it from other people. But in a relationship, you have to learn how to be bilingual or even trilingual, which is going to be clunky and awkward, which means your accent's going to be off. Like you might do something trying out to do an act of service that they didn't care about.
Right. So, I did the laundry, but you actually shrunk all the laundry. But it's like I was trying to help.
And they're all pink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it is a learning process of how to speak another language, which comes back to communication.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have not from our partner because we ask not. And it's like, if I need a hug, I have to be responsible to ask for the hug. If I need encouragement, I have to be responsible to ask for encouragement. So yes, we want our partner to be able to read our cues and know what we need, but it doesn't matter how much someone loves you or how long you've been together. They aren't a mind reader and we have to use our voice to have a healthy relationship.
Okay. This is a semi fun one, but how do you keep the spark alive? So a lot of the questions were, we feel like roommates, you know, we've been together for 5 years, 10 years, however long it is. And now we've kind of, it feels like we've gone into the roommate phase. How do we like freshen it up and like keep the spark alive? Cause it's common, you know, the honeymoon phase does not last forever. It eventually, you know, so what are things that you can do?
So I think one of the best things is remembering why you got together in the first place. There's a lot of different levels of intimacy we share with different relationships. And one of the most common ones that we share with everybody is recreational intimacy. So doing a shared activity that we both mutually enjoy. So think about being in a stadium of, you know, 10,000 people, the Super Bowl recently happened, and like all these people are sharing this recreational intimacy, cheering for the same team. And when we fumble and other sports words.
You got it. That you, I did don't it. Know. You did that it.
Was,
you did
honestly,
it.
I mean, you had me.
I thought you were there.
Yeah.
And in the dating world, that's the first type of intimacy we typically cultivate is, hey, let's go catch a movie. Hey, let's go out to dinner. Hey, do you want to talk and go play putt-putt or do this or do that? Mm-hmm. We're doing a shared activity and it provides bonding opportunities, which then we can create intellectual intimacy and emotional intimacy. And oftentimes when we get in that roommate syndrome, and it can be for a variety of reasons, like maybe it's a hard season where we're going full-time with school or work or building a business or something of that nature, or we just had a kid and I'm sleepless and you're working and it looks like you're getting to go out and have all this fun. And like, there can be dissonance in different seasons of relationship, but keeping the spark alive takes a little friction. Like you have to do something to ignite it, and going out on a date might not create the spark right away. But if you always do the same thing for date night, considering doing something you've never done before, it can be very bonding to laugh. I was going to say at each other, but I meant with each other.
Both. Yeah.
For sure. I think that as we progress in relationship, there is a change that happens. This used to be called proverbially the 7-year itch, but somewhere in the range of about 5 to 7 years, the hormonal level of the relationship changes. We really go out of maybe that high dopamine rush of like, I get around
infatuation.
Yeah. Like infatuation, right? Like my hands sweat, my stomach. I feel like there's butterflies there. Eventually your butterflies all die and you're just looking at the other person and you're like, brush your hair.
They're like moths.
Yeah. They're just moths.
Eating away at your
breathe
heart.
With your mouth closed, right? Just like all the
or chew with your mouth closed.
Yes.
Mouth tape.
Yeah. It's like all the things that used to spark that rush of a feeling. Yeah. And if that's the spark that we're chasing, I think it's time to maybe discover that there's more to relationship than just infatuation. Mm-hmm. Because the rush of infatuation in the first few years of a relationship is powerful, but the deep bonding that can occur in the later years of a relationship statistically can provide more satisfaction than anyone who's in that like sweaty palm stage. Mm-hmm. And so we have to learn how to maybe pivot or appreciate that change. While you may be looking at a partner of 10 years and not feel the way you felt in high school, I wouldn't want to feel the way I felt in high school. There's a much deeper bond. We've been through tragedy. We've been through heartache. We've been through joy. We've been through victory. We've been through loss. And appreciating that bonding and learning how it can look in different seasons is part of the answer to this question. Because when you look at a couple who's in their 70s and they just have the joy of relationship together, they aren't looking at each other and just feeling like, oh, my hands are sweaty. It's like, no, you know me and I know you. Yep. And we've journeyed through life together. And so I think that appreciating the newness of seasons, talking about what I've learned with you, where I am today with you, sharing those deeper things can create a deeper bond than just the rush of when you first met.
Wow.
That's really good. It's almost like just like redefining what is spark in different seasons. And that makes a lot of sense.
Well,
even in just we've been married for 3 years.
Married for 3 years, together for like eight? 7 or 8. Yeah. I think eight years. When was it? What was the time you said?
Roughly 5 to 7 years.
5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You made it. You passed it.
Wow. But did you feel a change, a shift?
I think because we've done so much, before we got married, we did so much intentional work on our emotional, intellectual intimacy. I really feel like that just laid a great foundation for the understanding that a spark can look many, many different ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And like when I say
where
spark,
it's not just sex,
right? Yeah. Right. When I say, honestly, I feel like when I say spark, what I mean is like a feeling of connection or a feeling of intimacy. And that can be from a conversation, you know, it's not necessarily from, it doesn't have to be from anything out of the ordinary,
playing a game.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't just
mean, exactly.
I do feel like when it's like, how do you keep the spark alive? People automatically thinking of, how do we like get back to having sex again? Yeah. Or like, how do we like have more of that? Which, you know, maybe there's some validity to like having a sexless marriage for, you know, a long time and not being happy with that. How do you carry on with a relationship after somebody's cheated? How do you trust again? And we're off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's real. Mm-hmm. And I think that anytime we talk about betrayal in a relationship, and I'm assuming this question coming from someone who's experienced betrayal. Betrayal is trauma. Like, it is a very real kind of active pain, but it's not just active in the moment, but it shows up in a very patterned way moving forward. Anyone who's dealt with broken trust in a relationship, it's not just the event of infidelity, but it's all the questions surrounding infidelity. I believe the statistic of betrayed partners is that around 82% of betrayed partners, I believe, would say, I could move past this if I knew there would be no more lies.
Wow.
That indicates that it's not just the infidelity, it's the dishonesty. And going back, it's like seeing a good movie and at the end there's a twist and now you go back and you're replaying like every scene and you're like, wait, what was happening? Wait, this was not what I thought it was. Yeah, that's kind of the trauma that comes with betrayal. And so when someone has committed infidelity in a relationship and now we're trying to rebuild, the rebuilding of trust takes a lot of honesty and it takes a lot of time. The first thing is deciding, like, am I even able to go down this road of rebuilding? Mm-hmm. I think that requires some support, some counsel. You need to have some objective parties to guide you through. But the honesty component is really, really key.
I think it's also important for people to understand that people define infidelity differently. Mm-hmm. So for some people, an emotional affair is much more painful than a sexual affair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or even just a kiss with somebody who you're not married to. Many people would categorize that as infidelity.
Yeah.
And so for the person who maybe has been caught, they might downplay it or like, well, but it actually meant nothing. But to your partner, it broke all the trust. Yeah. And so it can be hard to have compassion in that moment when you're feeling ashamed. And I think that view of, okay, I have to recognize when I'm in a committed relationship, my actions don't just affect me. Mm-hmm. They affect the person that I've committed my life to. Mm-hmm. And I have to think holistically in that way. One of my favorite images for trust is that trust is earned in droplets and lost in buckets.
Yes, great.
And it's like the bucket is knocked totally over when we discover the affair, when we hear the news, when we get a new layer of information, it's just knocked over. And having walked alongside couples, specifically in counseling for 12 plus years, we've seen all kinds of stories happen all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. That there isn't something that's too far gone if both are willing to put in the work.
Right.
And that's really hard because this is such a tender space. Mm-hmm. And it can be frustrating because it takes a long time to rebuild trust. If you picture like filling up a bucket with a dropper, it's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. And there might be some knocks and some kicks along the way as we are rebuilding trust. We might lose a little trust. And so it is a long road, but it absolutely is possible for anybody who wants to walk that road.
Yeah, I think it also demands an exploration of sexually addictive behavior because it's really important for the offending partner to explore, where did this come from? Like, typically, statistically, it's not a singular event. It's usually fueled by perhaps pornographic addiction or sexually promiscuous behavior, right? So like, we don't just, oops, like I cheated.
Yeah.
Usually
yeah.
there's some kind of preoccupation or ritualization, something that's happening progressively under the surface. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately,
sorry, just like, whoa.
Exactly. Unless it's like a bad ice skating accident.
Sorry, right? I just always wear my rollerblades. And I'm still getting the hang of it.
Only my rollerblades.
It's just a little cornball moment. Yeah.
But
next callback.
Yes. But it's being able to say like, okay, what's really going on? And unfortunately what happens when infidelity is discovered usually is that the offending partner is like relieved because they've been carrying secrecy for a long time. Yeah. Right. So it's been like, they've been afraid. They've been scared. They've been struggling. Then it all comes out and it feels like, I can breathe.
Yeah.
But now the betrayed partner now receives the fullness of that weight that the offending partner has been carrying and hiding and holding. Now they get this weight. And what someone maybe has been holding for 10 years internally, now the other partner is day one, right? Of just like now having to process all of this. And so this is why I think time is really important. I think sometimes particularly believers feel like I have to forgive. I have to forgive really quickly. Mm. But you can't forgive something until you have fully understood, like, because forgiveness, at least in a biblical sense, is releasing someone's debt. You can't forgive until you know to the penny what the debt is. Mm. It wouldn't even be true forgiveness, right? To be able to say like, I forgive you for what has happened and what has caused in me. I'm releasing you of that debt. Mm-hmm. That takes some time. It takes some external support. But I think it really requires an exploration of like the roots and history. And that can be processed by a good like certified sex addiction therapist, getting some good counsel and support to really know what went on here. Mm-hmm. It's important.
Yeah. Do you think that the forgiveness and trust rebuilding journeys go hand in hand? So I feel like in the past I've known people who have been like, well, I feel like I need to forgive in order to rebuild trust, or I don't, or maybe vice versa. Do you think those things happen in conjunction, or maybe that's different for everyone?
It's a great question. I think forgiveness is solely an internal process.
Yeah.
It is my choice after I assess everything and I'm choosing to release the debt so that I can live freely and lightly.
That's true.
Rebuilding trust is a relational dynamic that requires mutual participation and mutual effort. And so we actually won't rebuild trust with everyone who has harmed us, because not everybody will be willing to participate in that process.
Yeah, sure. That's true.
Back to the question though, it sounds like the heart of the question is like, how do we move on? And I'm guessing that this is coming from a place of wanting to, right?
Yeah.
Like we want to move forward. We want to go there. And there are some really great ways, like things that can be rebuild trust, like check-ins and boundaries can be extremely helpful, right? Because the betrayed partner will often experience triggers of like they are on and they're in the same place or with the same people that maybe the previous infidelity happened, or, you know, maybe something.
Even dates, like, oh, on this day last year.
Right. Or you're going to the office and this person is there, right? Those triggers are extremely painful, right? And so you may have to be some, there may have to be some serious life adjustment to help safeguard the nature of the marriage. You might have to change careers. You might have to change jobs. You might have to have some kind of check-in in those areas that are difficult for the betrayed partner. And it's important that the partner who has been betrayed can start to feel safe again with this partner. And the offending partner has to contribute to that safety. It can't just be, I said, I'm sorry, get over it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, you are the one who caused this pain and trauma. You have to be just as active in the rebuilding of it. So for people who want to, boundaries, check-ins, getting some external support is key. And something that I think can go wrong is that the betrayed partner ends up having to like parent the offending partner of like, so what did you do? So what are you thinking? So as it was today a good day or a bad day? That needs to come from the offending partner, initiated by them, spoken up by them. You don't need to, the betrayed partner doesn't need to take on that role because it doesn't build trust.
Yeah.
It's better for the offending partner to say, hey, today was a good day, or today I struggled, but here's what I did. Here's how I sought support. Here's how I got help. Here's how I'm protecting my recovery. Like that needs to come from the offending partner, not be pulled out of them.
Okay. This was real. I want you to touch on this because it was helpful for me, because movies and society and they paint this picture of, you know, if you're not having sex at least once a day, you know, especially early on in marriage, this was something that we talked about. I was like almost feeling guilty. It's like, I feel like we should be having more sex, than we are. And I'm almost feeling guilty, but I don't, it's not that I'm like necessarily needing that, you know, but should I should, shouldn't I? Cause we're just, you know, we're newlyweds and that's how we're supposed to be. And can you just like kind of riff on that and talk about that a little bit?
You were so conflicted about it.
I was
like a lot of pressure, a lot of like second guessing. And I don't think you're the only person who deals with those questions because of the societal pressure of like sex is the gauge for the success of my relationship. Right. Sex is a part of the relationship. Granted, an important part of the relationship, but if we treat sex as this isolated component where it's like we need to be having this frequency of sex and this intensity of sex, and then the rest of our relationship has no intentionality to it, we're fooling ourselves. If we're going to try to have all this amazing sex but never have communication, we're fooling ourselves. And when sex becomes the compensation for maybe, or the overcompensation for deficits in other areas of the relationship, we are trying to make it more than it really is, right? Like your relationship needs to have emotional intimacy, spiritual intimacy, companionship. And then sex becomes the celebration of that, the kind of the fulfillment of all of that closeness. And I think a lot of people end up making sex like the make or break part of their relationship because it's the only intimacy that they have, sexual intimacy. They don't have emotional intimacy. They don't have like companionship. So sex is the only thing our relationship is propped up on. Mm-hmm. That's why it can become volatile, where it's like, we need it, we need it, we need it. And people get very addicted to intensity-based sex. This mm-hmm. is where a lot of sexual addiction gets born. It's like, it has to feel this certain intensity, and that's how I know there's love, that's how I know there's passion, that's how I feel powerful. Mm-hmm. Porn fuels this a lot because it's mm-hmm. all intensity-based. And there's like this, you know, this thought that like, oh, the more I get into marriage, it's less intense, less frequent, it's not hot, all these different things.
Right.
But
becomes vanilla.
We know that there's more satisfaction in long-term monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. And so this spark that people are chasing, that it feels intense and hot all the time, we're kind of lying to ourselves mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. the joy of someone fully knowing you, fully loving you, and also being sexually intimate with you, it's mm-hmm. much deeper. Mm-hmm. Like much, much deeper. Right. And mm-hmm. so when you see, you know, Phyllis and Michael in the store together, and you see like they've been together for 40 years, you got to know they've got some great things going on.
Totally.
And you're out here chasing someone in the club or swiping right, trying to find someone that you can find a spark with. Mm-hmm. That spark will be only a spark unless it's built into a flame over time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that sex is vital, but it's one part of the relationship, and you have to approach each part of the relationship with just as much intentionality as sex.
Transparently, like that's how our relationship started. I mean, we were just like two squirrels in a bag, just absolutely going animalistic.
I think that's a metaphor for fighting.
Oh, sorry. Oh yeah, you're right.
You could have said you were going nuts.
Oh God.
No, no, don't you do
no,
that.
No, we can't say that.
But it started off like extremely physical, and it was very like passionate, hot or whatever. Yeah. And so then
all spark,
no flame. Yeah. But then when we decided, and ultimately I decided, I was like, okay, I want to like wait till marriage.
Wow.
It was first off, we talked about this already, like on our other podcast episode, where that was hard for her initially, because it took a toll on her self-image of like, oh, not now another guy that doesn't want me, mm-hmm. that doesn't desire me, that doesn't want to pursue me. But for me, it was like, I want to know what this relationship is without that, because that was kind of the center of our relationship. And honestly, it was the best decision that we made. And it was 4 years before we ended up getting married, and we did nothing. I mean, barely even pecked on the lips, because if you did more than that, it would lead.
Squirrels.
It would get heat. Squirrels. Yeah, squirrels. Squirrels in a bag. Yeah. But it grew our emotional intimacy. Mm-hmm. Like this is kind of circling back to what you were talking about before, of how the spark doesn't mean that it's just physical.
Right.
It's like emotional intimacy that grows from that. And I think that's how we grew in that, so that the sex is great when it happens, but if that's not always there, that doesn't mean that we're second guessing our relationship and where we're at in our relationship.
I think like 90%, if not higher, of our opportunities to see what sexual intimacy looks like are really poor examples. Mm-hmm. Because nothing that you can find in Hollywood on Netflix, whatever, like it is not realistic in any sense of the word. Mm-hmm. And so if we are comparing ourselves of this is what it should be, that's a source of shame and setting ourselves up for failure because it's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. In a matter of 4 seasons, somehow everyone has dated everybody and slept with everybody.
And it's all okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's comparison always causes us to lose. Mm-hmm. Even if we're at the grocery store checkout line and we pick up the magazine of like 50 new ways to O, and mm-hmm. we think, oh my gosh, I only knew two of these. Yeah. What's wrong with me? Is something bad? But when we compare, we devalue what we do have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as a couple, the most important thing is that you two are on the same page about what do we want? Mm-hmm. What aligns with our values, with our faith, mm-hmm. with what feels safe and comfortable and fun and lovely for you, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. When we make it about us and doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks or what anybody else is doing, guess what? We are the ones who are going to be satisfied. Mm-hmm. But when we compare and start looking at, oh, so-and-so said we should do this, maybe we should try that, then we make ourselves inferior and plant those seeds of doubt.
Yeah.
beyond the sexual discussion, I think one of the most important things, this is going to be no shock, but every couple needs to critically consider how technology shows up in their marriage. Oh my gosh,
yeah.
It is probably one of the quickest, most practical things we can do to bring that spark back is actually look at each other, actually talk to each other, because every minute that you spend laying next to each other, scrolling on your phones, it distances the chance for those kind of chemical bonds, right? Like when we're in physical contact with each other, when we're talking together, when we're laughing together, it creates bonding. And that is how we move past just the hot stage of relationship into the profound stage of it. And I do believe technology is getting in the way of that. Laughing over a reel together, though fun, especially when it's your reels.
Stop
laughing over a reel.
You can go to Micah and Sarah on TikTok, Instagram, follow us.
Right, shameless plug. Laughing over it together, though it's fun, is not connecting with one another.
Yeah.
We have to put aside technology and learn to how to actually communicate, to laugh, to bond. You're probably either going to end up falling asleep quicker or having sex quicker, but like removing technology and just being together is vital to long-term relational health. So I feel it needed to be said. I think we all know it, but we don't do it.
Yep.
But we all know we need to do it.
We're guilty for sure.
Absolutely.
This is going to date us a little bit, but when we were in premarital counseling, I remember hearing the stat that couples who had a TV in their bedroom had less sex. So we were like, we're never going to have a TV in our room. And we didn't for
10 years,
10 years of our marriage. And you know, then we had a kid, but we didn't for a long time. And the reason I'm dating myself here is because when we got married, the iPhone was only 3 years old. Social media wasn't, like, apps weren't really a thing. It really was for texting and phone calls and a little bit of emailing.
Yeah.
And so as that has increased, it doesn't matter if you have a TV in your room or not, you have a distractor,
have a TV right?
I mean, you have a TV, computer,
everything.
You have everything.
I would suggest having a bedtime for your phone, right? When does my phone go to bed? Night-night. And now mom and dad can stay up.
And that's a personal boundary.
For sure.
Something you are committing. What am I exposing myself to or not? Yeah. What am I committing to myself? Which then gives me the capacity to commit to my marriage.
Yeah, for sure. It becomes very, like, navigating the boundaries of that when it comes to, like, it being a business for us has been such a learning curve in regards to, like, when do we shut that off?
The bedtime is 1 a.m.
Exactly, and that's so much time, because the wake time is probably as soon as you wake up.
Yes, it is. It is. But that's really good. We should definitely, like, just talk about, like, when that is bedtime. And just do
everyone should
do it.
Everyone should. Yeah. Even if you do it experimentally, 7 days, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I guarantee you'll sleep more 100%. For sure. But you'll also probably laugh.
Because ultimately it's like at some point it's like, I'm not really accomplishing anything. I'm doom scrolling.
I'm dopamine.
Yes, it totally is. That's exactly what it is. And we all know, we've heard it on so many other podcasts and biologists and all this. It's just like, this is the worst thing you can do right before bed. And I'm just like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Blue light.
As I'm watching them tell me that this is bad.
Yep.
Totally. Yep. Agree.
Thanks for the info. Thanks for letting me know.
Yep. Share. Wow, guys, this is packed out. This is really, really great. Thank you guys for coming on again and hosting us and feeding us. It was so great. And I'm sure at some point we'll probably do another one.
We could,
maybe we'll do a parenting one.
That would be so
fun. Oh yeah. That'd be good.
What you're doing is so special. And it was so beautiful for us to see some of the comments and responses last time, because there's a lot of things you can go watch, but the community that you're building, they're not just watching, they're participating, they're receiving, they're sharing. And that's really special. So we're here for it any and every time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you guys, and we're super grateful for everybody that has commented, left a comment. We read them, you know, leave a comment on this, leave a question. You know, maybe it'll be asked in further, you know, in future podcasts, and subscribe. You know, it really does help us out. It helps the algorithm. It pushes us out. The reason why we started this is to just help the people that are feeling lonely or feeling
like they're the only ones going through what they're going through.
Exactly.
If you're going through something, you're not alone.
And so we like to end all of our podcasts by saying, goodbye. I'm not, I don't know.
It was better than last time. It was not good.
No.
No.
But it was better.
It's never good. But it was
especially
better.
Especially times 4.
And you know what? Yeah. As long as we keep getting better, that's all.
Come on, marriage.
Let's go. Come on.
It wasn't good, but it's better.
There don't it is. Get bitter.
Just get better. Squirrels in a bag, Uncle Fred.
Goodbye.